and welcome back to another episode of Your Pocket Nurse, a podcast for student and graduate nurses. I would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the original owners of the land on which I am recording on today. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode. Sorry for a bit of a break, but life gets in the way when you're busy working and also trying to run a fun podcast. So apologies about the break, but today I am joined by Rory from Aussie Nurse Educator on Instagram. He's a clinical nurse specialist and educator in peri anesthetics. So I'm very excited to chat to him because I've actually never had a placement in theatre or recovery or anything like that, just dropping off and picking up patients. So I'm sure I'll learn a lot along with you guys. So hello, Rory.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. How about you, Mel?
Not bad. Enjoying my days off. It's awesome. Always nice.
You need plenty of days off post-night shift.
Oh, literally, I know. It's always sad thinking that I've already got night shifts in like 3 weeks. I don't know how that happened, but
that nest cycle will come around quick.
Yeah, it really does. But I know that's part of what I signed up for, as my boyfriend always tells me.
That's it. It's part of everything that goes into that little bag.
Yeah.
The whole bag, can't take part of it.
I know, but I have been like thinking about jobs I can do that don't require night shift, because I don't know, this last night shift run has just really thrown me, and I've been can't fall asleep, can't wake up at like a normal time. Like 9:30 is too much of a sleeping for me. Like I just feel like my day's gone already. Like because by the time you get up, have brekkie, it's like 10:30, 11, and it's like, you know, where's time gone?
Yeah, for sure. I feel the same as what you do there. And I think that you're about to get a great little insight into the fact that, you know, in peri-op you have limited night shifts. So this could be a little option for you.
I know. It could be a bit of a job introduction for me. Perfect. So usually I start off with three questions to sort of get to know you. So the first one is, why did you become a nurse in the first place? And if you weren't a nurse, what job do you think you'd have?
All right. Yeah. So this is a cool little question. So I think what is interesting to highlight here is that I never knew what nurses did, and I never actually did nursing to become a nurse. And a lot of people get quite confused at that stage, but you need a bit of more of a story there. So I, right from being a young child, I really wanted to be an anaesthetist or an electrician. Don't know how that came about, but that's what I was interested in. That's what I want. I was literally 7 years old. I asked my mum for a stethoscope for Christmas. So that's how serious I was. And I had other interests in between there, but essentially going along the pathway, I was going to leave school at end of year 10 and do apprenticeship and then go towards sort of the medical stuff. But that didn't go to plan. I ended up staying at school for other reasons, and that's another story. But anyway, I stayed at school and I started lifeguarding at the beach. I was an athlete during my teen years and into my, you know, earlier 20s, and I was a beach lifeguard straight out of school, and or while I was still at school as well. And that enabled me to go, okay, well, I really like this sort of rescue pre-hospital care stuff. You know, I do like the whole idea of medicine still and what I want to do. And the guys at the beach that trained us were intensive care paramedics, and I was able to have a good chat with a few of these guys and a few other things. And that's where I sort of started to delve into the area of paramedicine and nursing. And one of the great paramedics that I was training with, he said, Rory, if you want to be a doctor or if you want to be a paramedic, you should become a nurse first and see if you really like it, see what the industry is about, look after the patient from that point of view, and then work out into the other areas. And I thought that was some pretty cool advice. To give you an idea, I was literally 18 and thought nurses, you know, delivered stuff to patients and just helped doctors. I was very naive. I'd never been in a hospital before in my life. He had the Florence Nightingale type, you know, view of nursing from the early 1900s, never thought about, you know, the progression of the career and everything like that. So I literally enrolled in that next year, which was the first year out of school. So I was still lifeguarding over that summer, got straight into nursing. Interesting enough, I actually got a scholarship to do school teaching. So I turned that down to do the nursing. So I knew that I was interested in that health and medical type stuff. And then that's where it really started. So, you know, as I said, I didn't didn't do nursing because I wanted to be a nurse. I did nursing because I wanted to become a doctor. And
Interesting.
I'm not a doctor and I haven't studied medicine yet because nursing isn't what I thought it was. And nursing can offer you a lot in terms of variety and diversity. And even though nurses and doctors cross over in the work that we do, the roles are very different when you step back from the patient care. And if you're ever someone later in your career or throughout your career that wants to step away from patient care, or doesn't see yourself working with a patient all the time, that's some things that you should probably start to think about, because, you know, doctors will probably always work with patients and they'll become clinical specialists and all that sort of stuff. But even as a clinical specialist for me in nursing, and especially now as I've sort of, you know, because last year I was full-time CNS doing all the students, working theatres every single day. Now I'm not full-time, step back a tiny bit to do a few other things. And, you know, being in theatres as an anaesthetic nurse, you know, it's hard work, but it's enjoyable work for me. And when you're a specialist in anaesthetic nursing, you all of a sudden do other things. You know, you coordinate your area, you might order products, you might work with the nursing teams between scrubs and scouts and stuff like that. So you actually get removed a tiny bit from direct patient stuff, because you go into more of a coordination managerial type thing. And then if you step from clinical specialty into numbing sort of stuff, that's as practical as you can stay with climbing the ladder, so to speak. So they're the things that I think about. So when I went into my anaesthetic CNS, I loved the fact that you could be a clinical specialist and give back to the students and work with the anaesthetists and the patients and all of that. But as you grow through there, there's slightly a different journey. And I think that's what's interesting with nursing. There's so many things you can do. When I was at university, there was like 90-something jobs. I would easily tell you now, 10 years later, there's over 100 different nursing jobs that you can do. And some of them you don't even work with patients. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of messages there, but I went into nursing, as I said, very naive. And then look at the doors. You know, you go in, not only can you work critical care in hospital, you can work out of hospital, you don't have to work with patients. There's just so many options. And yes, there's other options in the medical world too for that. You don't have to work with patients specifically, but they are just slightly different roles. And as I said, nursing can offer you a lot. And you can also make it work for you. And as I just heard you say, with the night shifts, you're trying to probably make it work a bit more for you. And that's why I sort of consciously, as I went into nursing, I sort of chased a bit more of my interests. And then that's where I found perianaesthesia. And I like it for a number of different reasons. So, you know, back to the original questions, why did you do nursing? Well, as I said, to become a doctor, very interesting pathway. But then from there, what do I think I'd be if I wasn't a nurse? My areas of interest are in medical nursing, and then I do a lot of stuff with tech and software. And then, as I said, I like my hand, like do stuff with my hands. So, you know, the trades and stuff was also quite of a highlight for me, as all my family own their own businesses and they're all in trades. None of them are in health and medical. So I'm the outlier there. So if I didn't do nursing, I would probably do something in business, which, as you know, I run this business and I do the life-saving education and stuff. But if I didn't do nursing at all, I probably would do the same thing in business. I would do something in software engineering, or I'd go on to become a doctor. So as you can see, the things that I would do if I wasn't doing this still all incorporate my passions and all the things I'm interested in. And I think that's really important. Like, we need to find what we're interested in and really hone in on that and find out why we like to do it, and then work with that, because that will really fuel you every day. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I might have said this tiny bit differently, because I was still in the world of building what I wanted to do in nursing and do I want to do medicine, all those other things. But if we focus on the why and do things because it fuels us, because we enjoy it, you'll get so much more out of yourself. And then if you're in something like nursing where you look after people, you'll get, you know, more out of the people around you that work with you, more out of the patients that you're caring for and all of that, because you just generally enjoy it.
Beautifully said, because, yeah, I think that's the beauty of nursing, is that there's so many different areas to go into, and you've really got to find your passion. Because I think many people that go into nursing, you know, obviously love people, you know, and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you can still feel lost and feel like you're not actually working in an area of passion. And that's, I suppose, when burnout might come about. And yeah, I think you have to go back to the basics and think, like, you know, where am I going to be most happy? Because at the end of the day, that's where you know, you spend most of your life, unfortunately, working and sleeping. So I suppose we all like to sleep, but we should also find a job that we actually enjoy doing at the same time.
Yeah, and, 100%. We need to enjoy our work.
Yeah.
It's like necessity.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, lucky we've got many options, because I suppose, you know, many other careers don't have all these opportunities. And, you know, if you're bored of, you know, an area, you can go somewhere else. Many of them are quite limited. So, yeah, interesting way to get into nursing, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I once thought about, like, not very seriously, but I once thought about being a doctor, because I think, once again, I knew what nurses did, but I suppose I didn't truly realize how many areas there are and how far up the ladder you can go. I think I just sort of just like the idea of becoming a doctor by watching Grey's Anatomy and things like that. But let's be real, what they do on Grey's Anatomy is practically what nurses do. You know, I don't see any doctors pushing around patients around the hospital to their scans and things like that. So
yeah,
maybe 100%. I was just seeing the role of a true nurse, not really a doctor, on the show.
It's always funny watching those shows and seeing that some things they can depict quite well, but then, you know, you see the other things that are just absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't serve our industry any well. That doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
No one wants to see oxygen tubing coming out of a mouth and not an ET tube, or, you know, an ET tube is a cannula or something like that.
Oh, I know. It's hilarious. What would you say overall has been your favorite clinical experience, maybe back on like a placement there is many years ago or at work?
Yeah, so this one's an awesome question. And, you know, I think anyone who has fully immersed in their nursing training and or had a couple of years experience is going to have so many stories pop into their mind and be like, yep, this is the memorable moment for sure. However, across my training and career to date, as I said, there has been a handful that have been memorable, and then the whole bucket full that, you know, that are there that are really important as well for different reasons. But I guess an important message that I spread when I do things as simple as first aid training for people in the community, but also with junior nurses that are trying to understand nursing processes and other things other than just skills, is the most important thing you can do for a patient who is feeling unwell or scared or anything is just be there and reassure them. And I've had some pretty cool instances. So going back to when I was a student, you know, I was in an ED looking after a lady that was having an asthma attack, and she was in resus. And, you know, she came in with paramedics pushing on her rib cage, assisting her to expire the air from her lungs, because Ventolin and adrenaline and nothing that they had used so far had worked. And, you know, this lady's looking towards going towards a respiratory arrest and all that sort of stuff. And then because, you know, EDs are busy and there's so many people that are doing different things, I ended up being that person sitting there behind her just going, okay, each time you breathe out, I'm just going to push in your ribs and push in your ribs and push in your ribs, while the nurses are getting, you know, some other things, Ventolin sorted out, and they're getting some adrenaline drawn up just in case all these things happen, all that sort of stuff. And I remember after this event, like hours later, when she's still in resus, but she's sitting there breathing away quite fine on a Hudson mask or a non-rebreather at that stage, I said to her, you know, how are you going? And she, you know, was very tired and everything, but she had enough energy just to be like, I need to thank you, because you just would look at me and you would just talk to me like nothing else was happening. And I think, you know, I learned this at the beach years ago, when people are really scared when they're going through traumas and stuff like that. It's just be there with them. It's a crap day for them. It's crap for you because you're in the middle of managing it too, but it's their situation. Just look and connect with them and just let them know that you're there and you're going to be there and you're going to help them out. And that just gives them so much. So that's like not an amazing experience on my side, but in terms of I changed that lady's life and made her feel, you know, that she had someone directly caring for them and I wasn't going to leave and stuff. And that's always stayed with me. But also, you know, being in PACU as a new grad, I looked after a lady who had a certain procedure done, and, you know, partway through her care and recovery, you know, she became aware that I'm taking care of her, and I had a good chat with her and stuff. And I don't know, this is the way that I was communicating with her, and I took a bit more time with certain things, and I was about to go on a break, and then I was pretty much saying to her that I'm just going to hand over to this nurse. She's going to take you to the ward. I'm going to go for a break. And she's, no, can you take me to the ward? So I ended up just doing that. And then she said to me, like, you've just been amazing. You just sat with me. You've answered all my questions. And then, you know, I just didn't think anything of it. I was just being, you know, what I considered to be a good nurse. But then, like, you know, a week later, I get this letter and I had no idea that she was an OAM, you know, in Australia and all that sort of stuff. And she wrote this big letter and lettered it to the hospital and stuff. And I've still got it somewhere at home. You know, when my wife and I cleaned up a few things, I found it a few months ago and gave it another read. And that is really cool to be, you know, she recognised that before and she really appreciated it. So both of those times, I'm literally just like there. Present with them, you know, and like that's just so powerful. And nurses get to do that, you know. I think that's so important. And then on another note, same sort of situation, bariatric female patient having bariatric surgery in uncontrolled pain in recovery that's had every intervention intraoperatively, preoperatively, and part of the anesthetic techniques and plans and stuff to manage that pain. And then in recovery as part of emerging, you know, she's emerging from the anesthetic as well as having this ridiculous pain that she's perceiving that's just moving her around the bed, not able to, not and allowing her to breathe up, not allowing her to be safe within herself at all. So it's like, we need to manage this, you know, and she's not communicating directly yet because she's still emerging from anesthetic and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're doing pain protocol stuff with more medications than what we standardly use, like not just fentanyl, other types of faster acting and mixed medications. And the anaesthetist is looking at coming back and helping us out for a bit. But then after a few minutes, we're able to get on top of a few things. And then she's my patient and we attach PCAs. And then as she starts becoming more coherent and aware, we start less managing her pain and empowering her with the button and teaching her about the button. And I ended up being with this woman for about 2 hours, just sitting there going through all this stuff. And yeah, you have to teach her 20 times to use a PCA. She's emerging from anesthetic. She doesn't remember what you're telling her, you know. So it can be frustrating for you, you know, because you're going, yep, I've said this 20 times now, but I'll say it one more time and hope that it will stick in. And after that, she started to remember a period of time throughout that. And then the next day, again, on the ward, dropping someone else off, she says, oh my God, you're that guy who just sat with me in recovery and looked after my pain. And, you know, we went out of recovery with a pain of still 4 out of 10. However, she was able to sit there, deep breathe, smile, fart, you know, and go up to the ward and have something to drink and start that rest of the process off for her rather than being in uncontrolled pain where she can't tolerate it and, you know, she'd be stuck for quite a while. So, you know, again, I was only present. I didn't do anything special. You know, I was just doing pain management and that was important and powerful for her. So, you know, there's those messages on the patient side. So being present and just undivided attention sort of thing. But then I was only a second year grad at this stage. I just finished my anaesthetic term and I got offered to stay at the hospital I was at because they enjoyed the work that I did in anaesthetics and maybe enjoyed me as a person, who knows. And I stayed there and was able to go into the cardiothoracic anaesthesia, which I did a tiny bit in my grad year. And I thought this is really cool. I was really interested in cardiothoracic anaesthesia and we had an ICU in this hospital and we also had an ED in this private hospital, which, you know, for context for listeners, you know, in Newcastle, we don't have any other EDs except the big tertiary one and a little tiny one that's in a district hospital and then this private ED. So, you know, for a slightly bigger area, you've got not many EDs and stuff. So in this anaesthetic role, I was getting exposed to all the private elective stuff that you would normally do, but also some emergency stuff too, which is pretty cool. And one of the surgeons that I was working with very regularly, he worked at the big tertiary hospital. He trained other surgeons. He trained all types of people, very invested in the public health as well as private health. And he got to know me a bit and enjoyed my company in theatre. And what was special about this is traditionally in a cardiothoracic theatre, the surgeon has got such a big surgical team as in other doctors and perfusionists and also the registered nurses or the specialists that are doing the nursing side with the table management and all the equipment and stuff. And then on the other side of the drapes, right up the end, you've got the anaesthetist and anaesthetic nurse. So usually when you've got a cardiothoracic surgeon, the anaesthetic nurse isn't even thought about, right? And this particular cardiothoracic surgeon not only spoke to me every day, he walked me through all the clinical pictures of things and everything. And to give you an idea, what we majority of the time did with these patients when I was working in there was coronary artery bypass grafting, mitral valves, aortic valves, and tricuspid valve repairs. And one day we were doing a valve repair and you know, we have to put them on to bypass and stuff. And so the heart doesn't have any fluid in it at the stage when the surgeon's doing certain things in the heart with the valve. It's all on the machines, and they're being oxygenated and looked after by that machine. So it's not actually going through their lungs, not going through their heart. None of that's doing any of it at this stage. We're all doing it by a machine, and then we put it back, and yeah, that's another story. But this surgeon says, you know, talking about the heart as he's doing his work and stuff, and he's always asking questions over the drape, and he'd always include me in the questions. I always loved it. It was such a good learning experience. But he said, "Hey, Rory, you're sitting there, can't see over the drapes." And I said, "Yeah, yeah." And he goes, "Put your glasses on, stick your head over the drapes quick." And I was like, "Yeah, buddy, I grabbed my glasses, chuck them on, looked over the drapes." And kid you not, he had cuts through the aorta because he has to look at this valve and stuff he's doing. He grabbed the aorta from both sides. He lifted it up and out of the chest. And he said, "Rory, look down from the head now." And I looked over the curtain straight down through this vessel, and I could see straight down to the valve in the heart just by looking through this aorta. And I looked up at him, and he just smiled and he said, "Bloody cool, hey." And I was like, "Holy crap, this is like the best day of my life." You know?
Literally.
So that was just amazing, you know, just for him to take 2 seconds to give me that learning experience and to give me that joy, and just to build that fire. Because, you know, a lot of people that go into theatres, whether you're a student or a new grad or whatever you are, it's a very exciting area, but you've got to do your job as well. And doing your job sometimes can be just doing your job, you know. But this guy literally was like, "Nah, got to teach all these people. We've got to keep them infused, all this sort of stuff." And just his way of managing, you know, himself around the theatre was just so lovely, because he would talk to everyone. He would teach people, even if they were nurses, and even on the anaesthetic side. It was just great. And that was probably a key learning experience for me that went, wow, theatres is cool. We can do a lot of cool stuff. There's a lot of amazing people. And I'll always remember that. I can see it right now as I'm talking about. I can see down that vessel and straight into that valve. And yeah, so that was a cool one that I thought I'd add onto the list to mention this podcast.
Amazing. Yeah, they're all very like different experiences, and I think it just comes back to, you know, at the end of the day, our patients, they, what do they care about most is like that patient-centered care, you know, taking that time to actually sit down and realize what's most important to them, because, you know, sometimes it's just the most simple gestures, and that's what makes their whole stay so much better. I think that sometimes, you know, especially as new grads, we overcomplicate things, and we're, you know, thinking about all these things because we're trying to learn and everything. But, you know, the patients just want sort of sometimes the basics. You know, you've got those other patients that are constantly buzzing and want a lot of extra.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of the time, you know, it's just like that basic human interaction, and, you know, that's what they really want. So,
yeah, it definitely makes there's 2 hours in a day that they get family time, you know,
yeah.
2 hours and 24 hours. And then their nurse, you're so busy looking after your patient load and everything. Yeah, they just want that connection. They just want that 5 minutes, you know, it's so special, that 5 minutes.
It's so nice when they recognize it. It's a bit weird. I was telling my boyfriend, but like recently on the COVID ward, two of my patients have been like kissing my hand to say thank you, because they're like non-English speaking background, and the way they're like showing appreciation is by kissing my hand. And he's like to me, "Oh my god, you let COVID patients kiss your hand?" And I'm like, "Oh well, you know, I sanitize afterwards, it's fine, you know, I don't
care." That's it.
And he's like gobsmacked. I'm like, well, at least they're appreciative of, you know, what I've done for them, you know. And sometimes it's literally the most basic thing I did for them, and it's not like rocket science. And they're like, "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you." So yeah, always just remember the basics, because that's really what makes a difference to the patients.
Definitely.
So you've introduced us to how you came about nursing, but tell us a bit more about your nursing journey and how you ended up working in peri anaesthetics.
Yeah. So this is also a pretty cool one. Every nursing student gets this at orientation, only because I think there's some messages there. I don't like blowing my story all the time, but I tell this story from having a great experience as a nursing student, where I was in third year and I come off an ED placement as my first placement of the year. And I loved it in terms of nursing was a bit slow in terms of getting you to some interesting stuff for me. And then we got to the end of second year, and then third year hit, and it started to be very interesting. And then went to that ED placement, had the best time of life, lots more learning experiences. That's where the asthma thing that we just mentioned happened. And I went off to my last placement, and that's your 5-week placement, and where you finish it all up, you're told if you're safe enough to become a grad and all those types of things. And I was like, right, I've done ED, I really want ICU again or in theatres. And I put down all the options for all those things, ICU, ED, theatre. I also, working as a lifeguard on the side, also did a bit of undergrad AIN work. And that AIN stuff I did in the same hospital that I worked in the ED, tiny bit in the ED, but also on the surgical ward. So I opened up my placement preferences and it said Cessnock Surgical. And to give you guys an idea, Cessnock is like, say, an hour and a half from Newcastle until the new bypass was put in. Now it's about 45 minutes. Even though it's only 45 minutes, when you get there, it's a full-on rural district hospital. There's no doctors. It's just the surgeons and just the GPs that come in every day and see their patients. And wow. You might have a GP go to the ED for a couple of hours during the day if they're busy and stuff like that. And, you know, it's quite easy for you to go, oh, I already work on a surgical ward. It's going to be so crap, you know, whatever. I've got 5 weeks there. I'm not going to learn anything. All those types of things that might get into your brain as a student and someone who thinks that there's going to be not much opportunity there. But I do believe that regardless of what's on your plate, you can add extra things to your plate. And that's exactly how I sort of view this. It's like, well, I'm not going to be changing the placement. That's not appropriate. And all of those things, you just got to go there and you just got to tackle it, you know, as best you can. So I went there, and right from day one, how amazing was this experience? You walk in, educator, 5 foot tall, 70-year-old, absolutely crazy woman who was just so passionate about her job. And over rural hospitals and stuff, when things happen, anything, it's the nurses and the educators and those key specialists that are the team for everything, right? And I chose to do my clinical follow around first. So I got out of the road in end of week two. And then I had 3 weeks. And this educator said to me, Rory, what do you want to do across? And I was like, oh my God, this is all. Can I go to ED for a couple of days? Yep, sweet. So off to ED. So I go to ED, cardiac arrest. There's no doctors, right? So it's 3 nursing staff. Let's go. So it's like student, third year, doing resus, doing all that. In these rural hospitals, they have resus bays, but you know, there's no real resus nurse, you know, in that area. It's just one of the ED nurses and doctors, as I said. So there's screens in there and videos, and the consultants, registrars and stuff, if they're free at John Hunter, the big tertiary hospital near we live, but it's like a good 50 minutes away from this hospital, they dial in via video and they run the arrest via video, and they assist the nurses. Yeah. So I'm there pumping the chest, and got 3 nurses doing stuff around me doing this. The educator's just there going, and the registrars are just like, right, you need to intubate this patient now because of this. And back then we did intubate a bit earlier than what we do now. And the educator's just like, yep, someone get me a scope, get me this. Yeah, and next minute she's just intubating. I'm going, what's the educator? And it's just like, and then after I was like, so, and she's like, out here, we're advanced practice nurses. There is no doctors. You can't wait for a doctor to do these things. And I'm like, wow, but this is public health. If I was at John Hunter, like, you'd lose your job for doing that. So she's been trained in all those extra things to be able to do these things out rurally. So I got a good idea, even though you're right in the city, that rural nursing is another area of nursing in itself, you know. Yeah. And I've got lots of stories about that from that. So anyway, I left this ED, had that great experience, and I said, oh, can I go into PACU anaesthetics? And she said, yeah, for sure. So he went down to PACU anaesthetics, and this is the part that changed my life. So I came in as a lifeguard. I'd done some advanced resus training and stuff before, and I was already interested. I already knew as a student, as a third year, about to graduate and become a grad, I knew that my area of interest was trauma and ED, pre-hospital care, aquatic rescue. But I knew within the clinical stuff that my interest was consciousness, pain management, resuscitation, you know, the ABCs, all that sort of stuff. And I went into theatres and I went into the whole PACU stuff, did some ABCs for a few hours. And then this anaesthetist heard me talking about lifeguard and a few other things. And he said, you need to come in here with me. So I went into theatres. And this is the part that I was just like, wow. So he's like, ask me a few questions, you know, general sort of answering sort of stuff. And then all of a sudden he's like, rightio, this patient's going off to sleep. I want you to put this airway into this hole, which is him pointing at the mouth saying, I want this LMA, laryngeal mask, to go into this mouth down towards the trachea. So it sits supraglottically above the trachea, just at the back of the mouth. It's sort of like an oropharyngeal airway on steroids, essentially. And I've popped that in and then we continued chatting and we've done a few things that I just had an absolute ball doing. And then he said to me, he said, Roy, you've had a lot of fun today, haven't you? I was just like, mate, this is the best day of my life. So of course I'm sitting there going, now I know that I sort of want to head towards ED anesthesia. And I also sort of now definitely know that I like anesthetics and I might want to become an anesthetist. However, he said to me, he said, Rory, a guy like you is destined with your skills and interests to go towards an ED. And I said, yeah. And he goes, but you've never been in theatres before, had you? And I said, no. I was just like you, Mill. Had never been offered a placement, never had that opportunity, you know. So I went into the theatres and he said this to me after this experience. He said, Rory, what does every hospital in Australia do? And I went, oh, looks after patients. And he goes, no, no, no. What do they actually do? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I didn't know where he was going with it. And he said, they do surgery. And I was sitting there going, yeah, right. And he said, they don't have EDs, they don't have ICUs, but every hospital in Australia does surgery. And I was like, yeah, right. So then, part of progressing through doing some other study and stuff in China, I realized over a 4-year period from 2010 to 2014, they had the uprise of day surgery and they had from 44 day hospitals to 448 in
What?
4 years. And then I started to get a bit of a perspective that day surgery is actually the future of the world. And people don't have trauma all the time, they have surgery because we have so many people that have elective surgery. So then I went, you know what? I don't want to start in ED now. I'm going to chase a theatre new grad. And I didn't even know it was a thing because he said to me, if you've liked what you've done here today and you can see yourself working in theatres in the future, why don't you chase a theatre new grad and said, do something different? And I went, is there such thing? So I went home, did a bit of a research, and just like you said, Mill, we're not exposed to theatres. We don't see it. They don't talk about it. Nothing about it. Even the new grad programs, all the things online, they don't ever talk to you about the theatre specific stuff unless you find it yourself. And I found through doing a bit of research that they do offer theatre grads, especially in the bigger private hospitals. And in the public hospitals, they do it as sort of a second year program. But yeah, in the private hospitals, you can not only go into theatres, you can then choose, do I want to do the surgical side? Do I want to do the peri-anesthesia side? And that's where I sort of come from being a third year through possibly looking at a different varied placement experience, turned that into an awesome experience, had a ridiculous amount of learning opportunities and met new people, and then was able to identify, you know, the area that's basically set up my career. So I consciously then after that went, I'm going to chase this new grad in theatres. I went for three across Newcastle. I went for three theatre new grad positions, plus the standard grad position for public health, plus the standard position for the biggest private hospital network in the area. And then when I was offered them all, I was able to then go, okay, I can now choose exactly what suits me and look after myself a tiny bit. And luckily for me, I was offered a peri-anesthetic. Well, I was offered any new grad I wanted. And when I chose, I said, can I do the peri-anesthesia pathway? And they said, oh, that surprised us. We thought you would have chose surgery because, you know, within my interview and stuff, I talked about not only my interests, but the fact that I'd had trade experience, good with my hands and other things. And they just assumed that I'd like to go into orthopedics and do carpentry and all that sort of stuff. But no, that wasn't the case at all. I was very clinical and I knew what I wanted to do and focus on. And as you know, from this podcast, I've wanted to be an anaesthetist. So I was like, no, peri-anaesthetic side. And I started there. And from day one, I was like, I've made the best choice. Like, I love this stuff. And then, you know, after my grad and the second year stuff I was talking about before in cardiothoracics, so I still kept that ED fire alive and sort of kept the whole options open everywhere, even for paramedicine, because I did that training and stuff too. But then I consciously went, you know what? No, I'm going to go back and I'm going to specialize in anaesthetics. I'm going to become an educator in that area because I already did some education for lifeguarding. And I was like, I'm definitely going to be educating in every part of my life that I do. I just want to, you know, do it the best way possible. And that's where I just started. And right from sort of 3 years into being a nurse, I was like, radio, knuckle down, did the specialty, this. And then, yeah, turned it on to become the educator that I am today and the peri-anesthetic specialist and just absolutely love peri-anesthesia. And, you know, with you saying that you hadn't been offered that opportunity to go near theatres, to give you an idea of what I do to bridge this little gap, because I see this as such an issue in a people don't get exposed to it, is every student that comes to the hospital where I'm an educator at, every single student, regardless of whether they're going through theatres or not, as in if they're on the surgical ward or if they're on the rehab ward or whatever, I still take them through theatres for orientation, just so they can see it all and they can see a surgical room, they can see a scrub nurse, see everything behind the doors. And I'm talking, we actually get We put our scrubs on. We go into the theatre change rooms. Scrubs go on, and we go in and we have a 15, 20-minute walk around, ask questions, all that sort of stuff. And then if you're lucky enough to be in theatres, you're in theatres, but if you're in day surgery or something just outside, I always get you into theatres for a couple of days. And then if you're on the surgical ward or in the rehab area, we'll cycle you through theatre for a day to do patient follow around. So you can do a full experience with the patient and see what happens to them in anaesthesia, what happens in them in the surgery room, sit them in for the surgery and then go to PACU, look at their PACU care, and then follow them to the ward or out to day surgery. And every student, I believe, that I'm sort of having under my wing as a third year is getting at least a good perspective of what it could be like behind those doors, rather than getting into a grad sort of situation like you are, and sort of going, I don't even know what happens. I just drop my patient at the doors. So, yeah, because I think a lot of exciting things to happen for students and new grads in theatres, but also just a different way to nurse. And, you know, it becomes a little specialty as well. So it's such a little awesome area to nurse in, I reckon. So if you haven't tried it or want to try it, come give it a go.
Yeah. Well, your students are very lucky. I wish you were my educator. That sounds amazing.
Well, you know, I've always been passionate about education. And before this year, I actually worked one-on-one and only had one student at a time. And I was in anaesthetics the whole time. So I would have them with me for the period, and then I'd modify their program with the scrub nurses and with the recovery nurses. And we all worked in the same area. However, this year, I took a step back from all of that sort of stuff. And I actually went to another location, and here it's a much bigger hospital with a lot other services involved, and I have at least in one placement period I'd have at least 6-7 students at a time. And then within that you've got all the different areas that they can be in and go to and stuff, so it's not just peri-anesthesia education for me anymore. That's a good focus of it, and I've got CNS staff to work with to help on both sides of the fence with the students in there, plus I can go in there. However, I do a lot of the other hospital education stuff now, which is, you know, it's good to pull all the rest of the education into the nursing process for the students as well, because, you know, peri-anesthesia and perioperative nursing is very specific.
Yeah, of course. Speaking of all the different roles, can you explain briefly what everyone does? Because I feel like you are mentioning like surgical and sort of recovery, but like what can you expect from the different roles?
Yeah, so traditionally, if you just look at a bit of historical context, traditionally the theatre nurses or the periop nurses were the scrub nurse. So the scrub nurse runs the room and it's their room, so they're the RN. And then you've got the scout nurse. They can be an EN, RN, AIN, depending on, you know, the facility and what procedures you're doing and stuff. And then they work directly with the scrub nurse. And then they're the surgical side. So they work with the surgeon when the surgeon's there. And if the surgeon's not there, they're primary role is to be prepared for the surgery and think about the surgical side of things, but then also run the room. So they run the room in that we're in there too. So even though I'm an anaesthetic CNS, I'm not in charge of the room. It's the registered nurse who's the scrub nurse. It's their room. We just walk in and do the anaesthetic services in the room for the scrub team to do their work. So in terms of the in sort of room team, it was those two nurses plus the anaesthetic nurse. And then over time, we've added people in. So just a quick learning thing about anaesthesia. Anaesthesia has multiple stages. So we have induction, maintenance, and emergence as the first three stages. Induction and maintenance happens in theatre. Emergence happens sometimes in theatre if they're endotracheal intubated. But then it happens in recovery if they've got a laryngeal mask in. And because they have airways in recovery, and other types of advanced needs, and they're not with their anaesthetist anymore, that was the recovery nurse was born. So they're the specialists of, you know, A, B, C, and D, and then out the door sort of thing. So they do the emerging and or the fourth stage of anaesthesia, which is recovery. So you had the addition of the recovery nurse. So then it became like, you know, a whole ward was real close to theatres, and then it was like, oh, what are these recovery nurses? But then over time, you had the anaesthetic team joined. So we became the post anaesthetic care unit with post anaesthetic care recovery nurses, and you've got anaesthetic nurse. So you've sort of got your peri-anaesthesia nursing team there. But not everyone who works in recovery works in anaesthetics. Not everyone who works in anaesthetics works in recovery, because over the time, mentioning, as we said there with the history, over the time, the anaesthetic nurse hasn't traditionally always been a nurse. Years ago, with that three-person picture I talked about, we were actually anaesthetic technicians. We weren't even nurses. We were technicians. So we ran the machines and we did the technical aspects of all the equipment and the machines for anaesthetic services. And then over time, there was sort of a breakdown in the nursing process in theatres. You would have a lovely nurse like yourself drop a patient at the door and they would hand over to the anaesthetic technician. And the anaesthetic technician would just say, yes, 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 and then walk them down to theatre. So the anaesthetic technician needs to be a nurse because there was a breakdown in that nursing process. The scrub nurse wouldn't be meeting the patient at the door because they're scrubbed with the surgeon. The anaesthetist is looking after the patient. So we needed this nurse to be in anaesthesia. So then anaesthetic technicians became ENs as well. And then over time, that all changed within that. And now what you've got is a dense network of anaesthetic RNs that are not technically trained. And then you've got some ENs that some are technically trained and some are not. So you've just got this bit of a different sort of, you know, banner of different nurses working in anaesthesia. And then you've got me, who's on the RN side, who then decided to specialise. So I did CNS stuff. And then part of our training is the technical aspect side and all those other things as well. So then you've got, you know, those four people that are in that sort of intraoperative or periop team. But then you've got one other person that can never be forgotten. So anaesthetists traditionally, before the practices were very safe and before things were, you know, as regimented and as fast as what they can be now or as efficient, anaesthetists used to see a lot of their patients on the wards the night before they went down for their surgery. And they did a good clinical assessment and all those types of things. And now a lot of our patients meet us at the door and we do an assessment and we go with it, unless it's invasive surgery or they're sick, you know, unless they're having hip surgery and they're 90 or, you know, they're having cardiac surgery or something like that. We always assess them for that. But if they're having like a colonoscopy, they're not going to be assessed before with the anaesthetist. So that's where this pre-op nurse come along. And the pre-op nurse is the one that will do the safe admission, will check out the patient, make sure all the dots are there, all the T's are crossed, and make sure that they're actually safe to come towards the theatre. So we already know things like allergies and fasting status and everything before we even see them. Then when we see them, we just confirm all of that. So you've sort of got a five-person team out. Started off as a three. And it started off, you know, with two nurses and a technician that went to then three nurses that went to then your four nurses that were all wearing scrubs, sort of, you know, behind all the closed doors and in the recovery areas. And then you've got the addition of the admission nurse now. And now, because of that rise of day surgery that I just talked to you about, the admission nurse's role and day surgery nursing role between admission and right through to discharge and stage two recovery is so important and needed. So that's another little area if people are interested in sort of a faster paced hybrid theatre environment. Day surgery environments are good to work in as well if that's what stimulates you. So that's sort of the picture as it is today, the five nurses spread out across all those little different roles.
Incredible. Yeah, because I've been thinking about day procedure because I think, I don't know if this sounds silly, but I just find I can't stand still and straight up for hours at a time. So I feel like I'm just not built for theatre nursing. Like I just don't think, because I'm a real fainter at times of the month. And I think it's just a risk. I'm going to be the next one on the table, you know, if I work in that area. So I feel like that's the one thing that always was stopping me. I actually had a theatre placement, but then I swapped it to a peds placement because I thought I was more interested in peds than theatre. And I also was thinking like, oh, no, I'm never going to work in theatre because I can't stand up straight for long periods of time. So I don't know if that's a silly excuse not to try.
Well, I think that's just like it highlights the whole like you don't know what you don't know before you get there, you know, because like, you know, for starters, I don't stand for the whole day. So when you look, I guess, at the different roles, they are so different. And that's why I think that, you know, traditionally back in time where the in-theatre nurses did everything, you could cross over between scrubs and anaesthetics and stuff. Now, because of the emerging specialties and the way it all goes, I just believe that we have different brains. You know, I've never spoke to a scrub nurse that does unconsciousness, airway, breathing, circulation and pain and stuff like the peri-anaesthetic crew do. But you can't say to the peri-anaesthetic crew, can you sterile field set up that for a surgeon or for do orthopedic? It's just not going to happen. So they are so different, you know. So the scrub nurse is the one that, you know, is scrubbed up. They're in the theatre first. They're out last. They're scrubbed the longest. They stand up the whole day. They don't go to the toilet a lot. They don't get full length breaks. They just have to do basically what the surgeon is doing. Especially if you work privately, it's just what ends up happening. But on the anaesthetic side, I like to explain it. It's just like a flight. You're going overseas, right? We do a lot at the start and the end. So we do a lot of stuff at takeoff and landing. So we're like pilots. We do a really good takeoff, we do a really good landing, and we modify that each time based on the patient's condition, what they need, what the surgery that's going to be performed, and all those types of things. If takeoff goes really, really well, as soon as we've taken off, we hit autopilot. And when we hit autopilot, we sit down and we appreciate the fact that the surgeon and the surgical team are doing an amazing job on their side of the fence, and we get to watch. And this is, I think, the most powerful thing for me, and why I love my job so much, is that I have the job that I do and that I'm a specialist in and that I love to do day to day. But once I'm half finished and I'm sitting there on autopilot waiting for my next part of my role, I literally get to watch people passionately do what they enjoy doing, and they are amazing at what they do. So I watch all these amazing surgeries. I've got no inkling whatsoever to ever help a surgeon. I've got almost no inkling, even if I do medicine, to be a surgeon. However, watching them do their amazing work is bloody amazing, and I'm sitting there getting paid to watch them work. So then the anaesthetist and I can have a lovely chat. We can learn stuff about the surgery. We can talk to the surgeon. We can learn stuff between ourselves. And a lot of anaesthetists will end up doing other things with their time to keep themselves engaged, whether that be reading or learning other things or Sudoku, whatever. We have a lot of time to then prepare the next patient and do other things. So anaesthetics gives you that whole respect for the other side of the job and what's going on for the patient care, but also gives you enough time with that patient, and then you've got your time for your other patient. It's just beautiful to have a bit more time than what I would perceive in an ED or on a ward with your patient loads and stuff. We only have one patient at a time. And yeah, as I said, I don't stand all day, Mill. I find a fair bit of time to sit, because I think looking after our backs and sitting is really good.
Oh, beautiful. Well, yeah, I think it's just those misconceptions that you, if you like, don't know about something about an area, then you just think, oh, that's how it is, and you don't know any different. So
Yeah, that's
I
it.
suppose that's why I've been enjoying this podcast, is highlighting different areas of nursing. And it's nice, people have started to message me as well, to be like, hey, I work in dialysis, like if you're wanting to chat to someone that works in dialysis, like I'd be happy to come on. Because
How cool is that?
because at the start I was just sort of interviewing other people that had nursing Instagrams, or like friends that I knew were happy to chat. And now it's nice that people are like reaching out to me and wanting to chat about their areas, because I don't have connections with every different area of nursing. So I think it's nice to just actually know what the job is actually like from someone that works in that area and like all the good stuff.
I
So
just
it's
think that's awesome that you can start to show off a few of those other specialties, because some of the things, people wouldn't even have heard of. Like I say to some people, you could be a haematology nurse, and they're sort of like, what?
What?
And it's just like, well, the degree really forces you through aged care, mental health, and then through to your critical care. They are just the focus areas of where we do need nurses at the moment. However, the new focus areas in the future will probably be different. It might include theatres, it might include, dialysis or something. It's just, there is so many jobs, as we said earlier in this podcast. And if you follow your passions and what you're interested in, you'll find one that you love.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, it's definitely important. Speaking of pros and cons of different areas, what would you say the pros and cons are of peri-op?
Yeah, so I had a bit of a think about this, and I actually struggled to come up with a few cons. So
Just love the area too much.
that's it. So I guess we'll go through the negatives first. So the negative is that you can end up working on call. And I did this as a grad, new grad. Some people see it as a pro, some people see it as a con. When you work across PACU and anaesthesia, and you also do the cardiothoracic anaesthesia that includes the trauma stuff, I ended up being on call like 3 weekends out of 4, and you also had to do on call during the week. So I would leave work. I worked 5 days a week, Monday to Friday. You would leave work at X time. You'd be on call all night. If you got called in, you got called in. And then if you were on it the next morning at 7 or 8 o'clock or whatever, you were still expected to be there at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. So I hate that on call stuff works for some people, doesn't work for others. It didn't work for me in that I'd like to do a lot of stuff outside of work, and to be working on call even 2 out of 4 weekends is just not cool for me. Like you need to have your time. So if you go to well-staffed places and public places and stuff, you end up having sort of an equal share of on-call. So I was just doing a lot of on-call stuff. So I wrote that down as a bit of a negative. Mm-hmm. I don't see this as a negative, but some people do. So I put it down here. So early starts, late finishes. This is also on the positive side, though. So I wrote on the positive side that we've got a range of shifts available. So obviously in traditional nursing, you've got your 7 to 3.30, you know, you've got your 1 sort of to 9.30, 1.30 to 10 or whatever your facility does. And then you've got your night shift of your 10 hours, and then you've got your 12-hour, you know, critical care stuff. That's sort of like the 5 or 6 ranges of shifts almost that sort of appears in nursing in most areas. When you come to theatres, we start at 5, 5:30, 6:30, 6, 7, 7:30, 8, 8:39, sometimes 10, start at 11, 11:30, 12, 12, yeah, just all day basically. So when I worked, you know, in a big, big place that did a range of different surgeries, you know, you could be doing one start at 5:30 because it's orthopedic surgery. You could be doing one start at 5 a.m. because it's cardiothoracic surgery. You could be doing another start at 7 because it's just colonoscopies and the list kicks off at 8 o'clock. So you've got such a variety of shifts. And as I said, that can be a negative for some. However, I saw it as a positive because if I walked into a hospital to do anaesthetics at 5:30 in the morning, I'm walking out at 2 o'clock. That is awesome, right? Similarly, in a PACU, the latest shift we did in PACU was a 2 o'clock start. If you start at 2 and finish at 10:30, you've got your whole day. It's awesome, you know? So that really worked for me. The other thing that I think is a bit of a con but can be a plus, depending on which way you look at it as well, is doctors and patients start and finish after and before you. So as a theatre nurse, you don't have to be there at 7 o'clock for handover. If you start at 7 o'clock, you're starting setting up the theatre. And throughout that, you work with the team, set the theatre up, have your little huddle, have a little quick breakfast, gin wag, whatever. 8 o'clock's the start. So from about 7:30, 7:40, the patient will start to come down from the wards or through day surgery for you to start helping them out if you're an anaesthetic nurse. And then it all starts from there. The doctors then come at 8 o'clock and whatnot. So you have time to set up. That's a positive. But the other thing is some people like to work, you know, with all of that all the time. So I've listed it there as a con, but for me it was actually a positive because getting there without anyone else there, I was able to get all my structure and plans and stuff done, then all the action happens, and then once all the action happens, they all go, doctors and the patients, and then you've got time to clean up, make it all look nice again, ready for the next day, you know, depending on your shifts. So I've wrote it down as a con, but I see it a bit as a positive for me. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, out of a couple of things on the cons list, I've almost turned them into positives for us. So
it's
on the positive
list, you know,
what are that's the it, it's like, what are your strengths and weaknesses? So the first thing on the pros side, This isn't so like big anymore, but I used to write on this a lot because a lot of other nurses do this now too. But you have to be really comfortable with wearing your PJs all day. So whether you start at uni, just wear your scrubs around the house or PJs, get used to it because that's what we wear all day in theatres. Public health now wear scrubs all the time. They might not be as, you know, as comfy as ours in theatres, but you never know. And then in a few of the privates, they're all changing over to scrubs now too. So that used to be like our little marketing point. Wear comfy all day, wear your PJs, but not so much anymore. So yeah, if you like wearing loose baggy clothes and be comfortable at work, we do that. We have those ranges of shifts. We also have limited working weekends and nights. So in your privates, they won't work Sundays. They might work an occasional Saturday to process more patients for certain surgeries, but that's not a typical thing in all private hospitals. And it's largely Monday to Friday. So you've largely only got morning and afternoon or evening work that sometimes will go into the night, like at midnight, 1, 2 a.m., depending on where you work. But in saying that, there's limited the weekends, and then there's no nights in private at all. So you will not do a night shift as a private anaesthetic nurse most of the time, unless you're doing like maternity, which, you know, that's a different story. So that is sort of, you know, a positive there. And to give you an idea, big tertiary hospital in Newcastle called John Hunter Hospital. I've never worked there full time. However, I did accept a full time position there. And back in time, there's another story attached to that. And when I did accept that before choosing not to go for another reason, the num said to me, Rory, we do nights here, but it's just to staff the area. You will do about 12 nights a year. So even in a big tertiary trauma centre, she was saying to me, you would do 12 nights a year, and it's just to have you there covered, all that sort of stuff. It's sort of like an on-call team for EDs and traumas and stuff and whatever, because they don't do planned, scheduled, or elective surgery overnight in even a public hospital. It just doesn't happen. So, that's, I think, a big positive, because something that chased me away from sort of EDs and ICUs was the fact that you will do 60, 70% of your roster at nights. And I didn't particularly respond well to night shift. So it was something that I'd only want to do sporadic, and I definitely don't want to commit to doing it. So I chose anaesthesia. So it was sort of a me decision. Another big positive about anaesthetics is that, or theatre nursing, is that it actually encompasses every area of the patient's care in the one, because we care for one patient at a time. So in anaesthetics, we know everything about that patient. We should know everything about that patient. The surgical side, maybe not so much. However, it encompasses all area of that care. They come in with their dentures, they come in with their hearing aids, they come in with their problems, they're already catheterized, whatever it is, they come in with it. We have to care for all of that, plus do the surgery and everything else. Monitor all of that stuff. And then once we're satisfied with all the things to do with all the stuff we do in recovery, they go up to the ward and they have the rest of their cares done. So you can actually be a skilled nurse in your individual area of interest, but then have other nursing care that you're still involved with, because all of our patients have needs even when they travel through the theatre. The other thing in theatres is you can work in different teams. So as you heard me say before, cardiothoracics was something that I'd done. Something that they do in cardiothoracics and bigger orthopedics and trauma surgeries and stuff is something what they call cell saving, which is where the surgeons and the surgical teams that use suction to suck your blood up from the surgery, it is then spun down in a cell saving machine and processed, and then the anaesthetic team give it back to you. I was
Wow.
part of a cell saving thing at one of the hospitals I was at, and that made me interested in becoming a clinical perfusionist. And then learning that nurses can become clinical perfusionists and you don't have to be a doctor was another avenue that I just went, oh my God, that could be just so cool. So you can see how theatres has opened up a lot of like windows and doors for me to go, wow, do I want to travel through that or just look at it? Or, it's just awesome. So there was a lot of different teams. I've worked in small day surgery hospitals. I've worked in bigger hospitals. So that gives you an idea of bigger, even procedures and other things. So just so many diverse teams. So I've put that down as a plus. More than 8 hour shifts is something that's a possibility in anaesthetics and recovery. So traditionally, it is sort of an 8 hour shift sort of thing, like other nursing. However, day surgery facilities and stuff, they don't have two shifts. So I used to work at a place that was standard 10 hour shifts every day. However, you finished when the surgery's finished. So some days you could walk in and go, okay, we're going to be here all night, or you'd walk in and go, okay, we're going to finish around this time or whatever, and you have to manage your day around having to be there for a surgeon if they run over and everything, because that's just what you have to do, sort of thing. So if you like day surgery and that works for you, you can work massive days doing that. You can do bigger hospitals, 8 hour shifts. And in the same note, another positive here I've got is the bigger and smaller facilities. As you said, you thought about day surgery stuff. You can work literally in a day surgery procedural place, or you can work in a big, surgical center. There's just so many options, even across Newcastle, let alone Australia, for that. And then the last two positives I've got here is public versus private. In theatres, you can work both. A lot of people that love ED and that, they find that they can't really move around or go into the private system because there's not many offers for them. Where in anaesthetics, you can work as most diversely as you want in both areas. So there's other opportunities in within that in both of those services as well. So that's interesting. And I've got this one on this list too. It's just basically the doctors and nurses and the patients start at different times. So there's different variety of things to do within your work. So you're not rushing to get the handover. You're not always just dealing with the patients. There's other things within it, like equipment, technical aspects, and then the coordination stuff too. So perioperative encompasses a fair few of the skills that we use as nurses, but not always with patients as well. So that works for a lot of people as well, to keep them, fired and ready to go.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing those. It's lots of pros, it sounds like.
Well, just that's the love of the job, they're all the things that popped up first.
What tips would you have for grads going into peri-op with no previous experience and I suppose also insight into how students can sort of stand out or make the most of their placement as well.
Yeah. So with this was me. Like I didn't go into anesthesia, previously doing it. I've shared that story before where I had like literally a day or two of experience, but unless I was lucky enough to get that, I was going to be like literally completely clean going in. So in terms of what I did, I'd already recognized that I had those interests. So it's really cool if you can recognize like your interests and passions and stuff. So that really helped me. But I guess number one, go back to the last section, get comfortable in wearing pajamas, number one. Okay. Number two, research. I think a lot of people come to theatres going, it's going to be such a fun and interesting experience. It's going to be so many different things. Yes. And that is cool. However, when you come into theatres as a nursing student or a grad, you're coming in to do your work. Like you need to develop as a registered nurse that's working as a student. You need to become a good, confident and safe graduate nurse and consolidate all your learning. So you don't want to be distracted by all the fun that we have. So for students that come in, I do say to them, have a bit of a research in what we actually do. So look at what the surgery nurses do versus the anaesthetic nurses. Look at a few different procedures that we do in the hospital that you're at, because each hospital is very different. So just familiarize. It's just a basic familiarization of it. And to give you an idea, I'm doing a little guide on this as well too for the Aussie Nurse Educator, because I do think a lot of people would benefit from this sort of stuff around theatres, because I just feel like I say the same thing over and over again each time I get the students come through, and if the information is written down once, they can all see it. So the other thing with getting a perspective and research in the area is just sort of understand how it works. You know, it's hard because you're a student, you don't know what you don't know. However, it's really easy just to sort of have a little research of what is happening to a patient when they go to theatre. So they're obviously having surgery, but why do they need an anaesthetic? And if you can start to understand that, you'll then have a great picture of what we're actually there doing. So surgery is obviously the focus, but there's so many other things from what I said before, the admission nurse's role, the anaesthetic side of things, what the anaesthetic nurse is doing for the scrub nurse, even though they might not even talk about it, you know, all those types of things. That is a good head start for you to have a bit of a research, because uni is not going to tell you. You know, they're going to talk to you about the mental health and the aged care and the critical care placements, because that's the focuses. And unless you're lucky enough to get the placement, you're not going to get that perspective. So having a little research before you get there is really cool. And then from there, you know, there's no expectations on any equipment or anything. You're progressing as a nurse. If you're a student, understanding the nursing process is the most important. So if you're going into a recovery area, it's like, what is my role within the nursing process? And broadly, your role is to allow the patient to emerge from the anaesthetic. And then as they enter the recovery phase of the anaesthesia pathway, you lead them through recovery, empower them to start looking after themselves if you've needed to help them prior to that. So, you know, empowering PCAs, all that sort of stuff. And then once they're safe and satisfied discharge criteria, out they go. So as a recovery nurse, it's really handy, so to speak, to understand that your part in the nursing process is emerging from anaesthesia, getting them to a point where they're adequately safe within themselves to go to the ward, and that they're able to take care of themselves, like as in they're able to push a button for their pain, or you're able to work with the nurses to manage your pain. Once a few of those things are done and the discharge criteria is satisfied, they're out of your care. And the reason for that is because you're going to be getting another patient in a minute, you know. So your context of that patient's care as a recovery nurse in that part of the nursing process is very narrow, in terms of you've got a few goals and they're out the door. Stage one recovery nurses, they're so good at those little things because that's their job. So if you can understand those little things before you go there, that's a huge thing. I know I've mentioned a lot of things about research just then. You can't research at all, okay? So if you're going into being a scrub nurse, you research what is a scrub nurse, what is surgical nursing in a theatre environment. If you're going into anaesthetics, look at what anaesthetists and anaesthetic teams do for the surgery to enable it to happen. And it's as simple as that. If you can understand that before you get there, you'll understand 80% of what your educator and or anaesthetic CNS or scrub CNS says to you on day one without saying, excuse me, what was that word again? Because you would have seen it through a bit of the research that you've done. And I think that's pretty important for you guys, because you come along to a surgical placement, you're almost fully prepared. You came from labs, you've done some skills, you've talked about it at uni, you're ready to go. You come into theatres and you can almost spend a week trying to get ready to go, so to speak. So I say to all the students, even when I have five starting at the same time, I'll reach out to the theatre ones a week in advance and say, have a look at these few things online, have a look at this video, and come next week prepared. And pretty much 100% coming and going. It was really cool being able to watch that and read those couple of things. Hence why I thought about making this guide, because I think it does help them and it stimulates that start of the learning process. So they don't spend, as I said, the 3-4 days settling in and seeing some cool things. They spend a day settling in, a couple of days experiencing the cool things going around, and then all of a sudden they're immersing in that placement and getting that nursing process down packed. That was sort of more of a student sort of view, even though there was a few grads in there. What I did as a grad is, as I said, I knew what I was interested in and what I was good at. Going in, though, it was like I had questions about what was the program going to include, like how would I be taught this, and like all these different things. And you're not given any guides or anything before you turn up. So day one's literally day one. So everything I just mentioned, because I didn't have the opportunity to go into theatre as a grad, I did before I started as a grad. So I did the research of like, what is a scrub nurse? What is this? And all this sort of stuff. And it really did help, because then I went in feeling like I wasn't blind. And I knew a bit of the historical context of it, which I thought was important. And from there, when I went in, I was then able then to concentrate then on how the unit worked as a whole. And then, because I was quickly going to be jumping into the running of that unit in terms of being a nurse in there. Mm-hmm. So then I could concentrate on that. And once I could spend the day figuring out how the unit worked, I then could be with my CNS and learn the skills and the process of that hospital. So the skills was pretty cool because, you know, we'd done some critical care stuff and I'd done some pre-hospital care things and had other training. So I was a bit, I guess, I was more than ready for that stage where other nurses might need to do, a day or two extra more of, you know, airway-based stuff or this or that or whatever. And then as you go through and you're more confident caring for your patients, you get left alone a bit more. However, when you're getting left alone a bit more, it's also a time where you want to learn more. So that's the fine line between starting and how much you know. So I just encourage, before you start, do that research and have a bit of an idea of the historical context, but then look at what the service is doing and then what you have to do within that. And that's the three parts of it, really. And know that you play a vital role as a theatre nurse. We can't do it without you. You know, if you're one of the five people that I mentioned before, you're playing a vital role in the patient's care and for the work that we're doing for the patient from the surgical and anaesthetic perspective. So, yeah.
Amazing. Thank you. I'm sure, everyone's going to benefit from that, because I've been getting like lots of questions about periop, and I just have to say, reply back and say, I've got absolute no clues. So I was thinking, it's a perfect time to release this episode, especially 100%. With grad years coming up and people are sort of thinking, like, do I really want to apply for periop? Should I apply for a 12-month periop program, which you've spoken about? And it's definitely a more popular thing these days. Before, I felt like it was a bit difficult to find periop programs, but many private hospitals have like a full 12-month one. So if you know it's for you, it's definitely a good one to just get straight into it.
Yeah, 100%. If you feel that that's your area, you should definitely chase it. There's, as I said, a lot of opportunities, but as you said, maybe not too many about years ago, but with that rise of more day surgery across the world, you're going to see more and more theatre nurses needed. So if it does, at all interest you, even if you've already been a nurse for 10 or 20 years, come over and give it a try, because it could be that fresh start that you're looking for.
Definitely. And finally, I've just got a question about being a clinical educator. What is the process of becoming one? It's a bit different from the whole grad and student aspect, but, some people are thinking about being educators in the future. So how would you say you got into it?
Yeah, this is cool. So I'm super stoked that people are thinking about it, because that's just great. Not everyone goes towards that path. So every single RN is actually an educator in terms of, we educate our patients, we guide other staff, new staff, students, mentor, precept, all those types of things. However, becoming a full-on educator in terms of committing to, being on the university side or the hospital education side, or just going through to be a CNS and give a bit more on that educational side is so important, and it's something that's given so much to me as well as what I've been able to give to the people that I, you know, provide the education to. So I just love education. It's awesome. And it's going to be different everywhere you go. The private model and the public model is so very different. So the public model is very much you need 5 years of clinical specialty area experience, and then within that you need to have done a graduate certificates or diploma in that area. So basically be qualified as a CNS and or experience working as a CNS. With 5 years of dense full-time experience in that clinical specialty, regardless of CNS, you can then with a Cert 4 or a grad certificate in clinical education be an educator. However, in public hospitals, it does become very competitive between who's got what and say masters and stuff like that. So if someone traditionally applies for a job that's an education position that's got experience and or has got a master's degree, they will traditionally be a preferred candidate regardless of what the interview is and stuff. So, you know, it's the whole hierarchy of academia. If you've got a master's, it's seen as is sort of the bee's knees in clinical education. However, you can do what you need to do with a grad dip or a grad cert. And then in terms of privates, it's totally different again, because privates set up a bit differently. And as we've said before, bit of a rise in the surgical need of stuff. Not every private hospital has educators. That's something to be mindful of. A few of the private hospitals use their NUMS to be educators, or they have other ways of educating their staff. So it is a bit different in a private hospital. But I actually started my educational stuff in private, and also, you know, I was a peri-anesthetic or a perioperative sort of educator in the area that I was in. And to get to that in this private hospital, I had previous experience in education outside of nursing. I had my 5 years in my clinical area, plus I was a CNS qualified and working as one. And then from there, I've done various other things in education, but I don't have a master's in education. It's something that I've wanted to do, not because of, you know, the status or having the degree, more for different knowledge things within it and maybe doing a bit of research and stuff. But I haven't done it yet because I haven't needed to do it. And I don't want to, you know, rack up a 50 grand debt in a couple of years mm-hmm. of my life for no reason. It's got to be an intentional choice. And when you're looking at maybe doing medicine and stuff, it might not be the best choice. But in terms of becoming an educator, I would encourage you to sort of figure out what type of educator you want to be, because I started off working my own business, providing courses in the community. It was super duper fun. I met so many people, worked with a lot of different businesses and other services. It was just, as I said, fun and interesting. But then when I became, you know, competent and was a CNS in my area, I was like, well, I want to do exactly what I did in lifeguarding. I want to give back. I want to inspire people to become anaesthetic CNSs like me and want to become educators. And I just started, you know, doing the education in various aspects. As I said, every RN's an educator. So I started having students right from the get-go. I started thinking about ways that you can make it more interesting for them, doing things outside of the traditional boxes. And I would always do things like research what is the best way for a student nurse to learn today. Okay. And I only literally did this a few weeks ago again, just to make sure that the research is still in the same sort of area. And it is. It's all about procedural learning. So it's all about grabbing the theory and pulling it into practice and getting that practical experience by experiencing it. So that's why we still do student placements, yeah. The only thing is, the students from back in the day that did full-time hospital training probably did the whole procedural learning a tiny bit faster than what we did because they had more time doing it. So becoming an educator can be different between the uni, between working for yourself, between being a hospital educator. I've done them all, and I can say that they're all very varied and very different, and the goals are somewhat different between them all as well. But if you can have one that you prefer to work at or work in, that's probably something for you to identify, because I've worked with a few people over the years that are just hospital educators and they're amazing at what they do and they don't have any aspirations to work with the local university. However, you've got other people that work across all of it like me, and they fit in between all the different systems and give back to students from every perspective. And, you know, that was just something that I wanted to do because I like varied work. I don't like doing the same thing every day, even though I loved doing anaesthetics every day. You know, I love the variety in my work. So with educators, You know, I think as the world goes forward now, we're much more skills based anyway. And that's what I've seen across the educator front is that not everyone has master's degrees, not everyone has grad dips anymore and stuff like that. It's more, are you a clinical specialist? Can you educate? Have you got experience? Are you passionate? All those things. And then go in it from there. So the first thing for anyone wanting to go towards clinical education is look at the area you're interested in. Do you want to be an educator in that area? So for me, I was an anaesthetic specialist. I was like, yes, I want to teach other people this. Love it. So I went and did that. From there, it's like, okay, do you want to be a hospital educator? So you don't just work in your immediate area. You work running the education across the whole hospital. So you might include your mandatory annual training. But you'll also look at the different areas and work with the CNS staff and see that they're doing their specific area education, which you could be involved with if you're an anaesthetic specialist like I am. So this year, for instance, being a hospital educator, I'm a lot less in anaesthetics than what I am, what I used to be. And I'm definitely not as active with the students in anaesthesia, but I oversee the program that runs through theatres and I modify it with the key people in that area to make sure it's the best student experience that they can have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it gives you an idea of how that's evolved for me. At the university, I literally do, I'm just about to get pretty involved with that. It's literally traveling around to other hospitals, supporting students and doing skills-based stuff with them. So again, that's very different to what I just mentioned in the hospital. And then, as you guys know, if you follow me on Instagram and stuff, and you know my other business, I provide a service where we travel around and we provide those courses for hospitals and health services and other things. So there's three different ways just there that I'm an educator. You know, none of it's the same. And realistically, if you worked across public and private, there could be different skills or things needed in between that. So the first thing is know the area that you like, become a specialist in that area, even if it's not in a CNS role, just have the extra study and or passion for it, and then get something under your belt in education. Some of the best experiences you can have if you're interested in education is going to do some work in, say, a SIM centre. So where I live, the John Hunter Hospital has a big tertiary training centre in it. It's got a SIM lab and they have like literally a set of specialists, registrars and nurses that run this SIM lab. And it's the most amazing experience ever. That is another area that you can get into education that is so interesting, that gives so much value to our patients in terms of it improves the way clinicians respond, is simulation. So you can do education in there too. And when I looked at that a few years ago, you just needed to be a clinical specialist and do the course that they offer there. So you didn't even need to have accredited sort of educational experience from a grad cert, grad dip, or even a role prior. You just needed to really have a passion for simulation. So identify that love for the clinical area and follow that passion that you've all just sparked in saying, hey, how do I become an educator? What's the best way? Because I get asked this all the time too. When I put stuff up, how do you become an educator? Not many people ask how you become an CNS, but how do you become an educator? Mm. So, yeah, hot topic.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, thanks for sharing all your wisdom and everything about peri-anesthesia. I know I'm going to nearly stuff it up. It's just such a difficult word to say, to be honest.
I know. And plus when they throw around the whole American anesthesiologist, it just throws all that. What am I even trying to say here?
I know. I always try and avoid it when I'm at work because I'm like, if I say it wrong, it's going to make me sound silly. but yeah, thank you so much for sharing everything you know. It's been really lovely chatting to you.
It's been awesome chatting with you too, Mel. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I just loved what you said is that, you know, we're all educators in our own way, even, you know, grads, you know, you can provide education to, you know, even senior nurses that, you know, might not have known about a new way of doing things. So don't undermine 100%. Yourself. Like everyone has a role to play in education. And I think that's why many people go into nursing is that, you know, ongoing education and continuous learning and, you know, we can offer it to anyone.
Yeah. That's it. And just know that every single person, regardless of their years in nursing, they've all got life experience and a value to give you from that. There's messages between every experience we have in life. And I've seen exactly what you just said. I've seen grads teach 30, 40, 50-year veteran nurses. I've seen the opposite to that, obviously. But, yeah, I've seen a lot of positive experiences from people that are junior in their career and they're literally just passing on a learning experience they've had recently from them, and it was so powerful for the next person. So you're so right, some of the best people can be the people that have only just experienced it literally last week. So we are definitely all educators and we can all help each other.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And no worries.
Lovely day. Thanks for listening, everyone, and hope you enjoyed the episode.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
See ya.